Joining us now, friend of the show, former president of the PGA of America and author, Ted Bishop joins us. Ted, welcome back.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you doing?
We're doing awesome. Hopefully you got a nice weekend out there for some golf.
Yeah, it's great. It's been in the low 70s here in Indiana the past week, so perfect October weather.
Awesome. Well, you know, a couple weeks ago, the President's Cup wrapped up, and yet another dominating performance by the U.S. squad. So far, in all of the events dating back to 1994, there's been one tie and one win by the international team in Royal Melbourne down in Australia. Do we need to try and do something different to make this a little bit more fair? I mean, I know the Ryder Cup, the U.S. won 13 in a row at one point up to 1985, or do we just need to be patient and give the internationals a chance?
Well, it's an interesting question, and, you know, I think when you look at the roster of these last few world teams that have played in the President's Cup, you know, I mean, on paper, they look like pretty solid rosters. And I don't know, I was looking at this one and comparing it to the last European roster in the Ryder Cup. And I think you could have made a case that possibly the world team, you know, might have looked as good or as strong as the last European Ryder Cup team did. So, you know, I think that you just got to have to take your hat off to the American players, and I think team golf from the United States standpoint going forward, whether it's the Ryder Cup or the President's Cup, I really do think, given this core of players that's going to be a nucleus on these teams going forward, that we're going to be really hard to beat, and I could see us dominating both of these international team competitions certainly for the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. If we dog walked the Europeans in the Ryder Cup, nobody would be calling for format changes. But the President's Cup feels different. They may, because it's newer, because it really is, in many ways, a made-for-TV event. I think it opens up flexibility if they did want to do something and not, you know, attach. I mean, it, you know, the talk that was had around here, and I was certainly in favor of considering it, would be making this the event that we put the ladies and the men together. You know, we saw a great success at the U.S. Open where we played back-to-back in Pinehurst. I think it would be fun to see, you know, these international, you know, the ladies come over and sort of balance that out, what happened at the Solheim Cup, and then look at what's going on with the Ryder Cup and the President's Cup and put them together and make something truly international out of it. Do you see that as a viable option, since it really is, yeah, it's an entertainment, it's a made-for-TV event?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's a great suggestion. It certainly that has been talked about here in the last few months, and obviously with the interaction now between the PGA Tour and the LPGA, I would think that would make some semblance of sense. That will be a tough one for the PGA Tour, and you know, it was not that long ago, and I can remember this. You know, maybe 10 years ago when I first became an officer with the PGA of America. And, you know, there was a feeling inside the PGA of America that the tour really wanted to see the President's Cup supplant the Ryder Cup as the premier international team competitive event in golf. And obviously that didn't happen. It hasn't happened. It's not going to happen. But I think that you know, probably there were people at the tour back in that time frame that thought that the President's Cup could at least be on equal footing with the Ryder Cup. And, you know, Nick Price over the years has proposed maybe some changes in the format where you don't play as many matches because he's felt that the depth is what has ultimately gotten his team beaten in the past. So I don't know. You know, it's not a situation like it was with the Ryder Cup years ago where you could expand the field, I guess, and bring more players in. I suppose you could do that. You could bring the Europeans in, but I don't think that you would ever see that happen just because it would, I don't know, kind of mess up maybe the perception of the Ryder Cup. So it's going to be interesting. I mean, I kind of like your idea. You know, I thought a little bit about that myself, and I think it would be of some interest, but this unfortunately has become really no more than an exhibition match, and it's probably as lopsided as it was this past year. I'm sure there weren't too many people watching it. A lot of TVs were turned on to football.
Yeah, are you suggesting there might be some hubris in play that they, you know, that you know, a dramatic change in the format would be an admission of failure that perhaps they don't want to get near?
I think to a degree there may be some truth to that, but again, I get back to this nucleus of American players, and I mean, you know, when you look at this last roster, and you've got guys like Justin Thomas, Daniel Berger, Kevin Kisner, Ricky Fowler, Dustin Johnson, Jordan Spieth, Brooks Koepka, and Patrick Reed. I mean, that is a nucleus of eight players that appear to be pretty much stalwarts that are going to be very much a part of these international team competitions, at least for the next 5 or 6 years. And, you know, it really doesn't make any difference who the other four players are that are going to be on that team, and who knows who may emerge and who might even be on equal footing with those eight guys. But, you know, we have clearly, from the United States standpoint, going into a new era of players. And it's kind of interesting. I actually was trading some emails with Tom Watson after the President's Cup, and you know, I had said, Tom, boy, if you line up the roster of the 2014 Ryder Cup team and compare it with this roster that just played in the President's Cup team, it's just night and day difference. And it is. I mean, we've transitioned into this new era of players, and it just really looks good for the United States.
Yeah, but in the same breath, I know I did. I got a little annoyed at the fact that the comparison to this is potentially the greatest lineup of any American team ever, to me, way ahead, jumping the gun. I mean, 1981 is still by far and away, I mean, not even close. I get where they're going, but you can't even come close to making that comparison. I mean, there's probably 10 Ryder Cup teams that are better than this team, just where these guys are now.
Yeah, no. I totally agree with that. And what I'm talking about would be to compare it with the Ryder Cup teams from 2000 to 2014.
That were getting crushed.
Where I'm coming from. But I think, and you could say that with players in general. I mean, when you look at the number of major championships that, you know, these guys have won today, I mean, just look at this list. Thomas has won one. Spieth has won three.
You got Phil. I mean, I think you could add Tiger to this team, and it's still not as great as 81. I mean, not even close.
Not even close. This group of players that I just named, they got a long way to go to accomplish some of the great things that their predecessors did. I mean, you know, it's hard to win majors, and who knows how many of these guys are going to be multiple major championship winners.
Well, and when we talk about the filling the Tiger void, and we've been waiting for this group to mature and season, and they have now. This was, I think, a pretty good example of that. If these guys are really ready to carry the mantle, even if it takes eight of them to do so, why are we still following Tiger's every move? Are we missing the boat as people who promote this sport, continuing to dip back into the what if of Tiger? Is it time to move on, even if he comes back and plays? Why do we continue to do this instead of promoting those eight guys who can easily fill the void?
Well, I think it's a great question, and I guess you could answer it two ways. I think it speaks to what he did do in golf in his prime when, you know, he's a guy that won 14 major championships, but I do agree with you, and I've been saying this for two or three years now. If he was an athlete in any other sport, and given his age and the amount of time that he has missed with injury, first of all, comebacks wouldn't even be on anybody's radar. He would be out of his sport, and we've been down this road before, where he's coming back, he's supposedly healthy, and I think everybody wants him to succeed that's in the game in any way, shape, or form, because we know that it's good for the game in terms of interest and all the stuff that it does, I guess, outside the ropes to, you know, want people to watch more golf or to be involved some way in the sport. But in terms of him being able to successfully complete a comeback I just don't see it. In fact, I did a story for Morning Read after this past President's Cup, and the gist of the story was the landscape of future Ryder Cup captains. And, you know, in the back of my mind, when I started thinking about this 10 years ago and kind of mapped out who I thought Ryder Cup captains might be, I always kind of figured Woods would be maybe the captain of the 2026 team, which would be the 100th anniversary of the Ryder Cup. And I think now that whole thing has been accelerated forward for him. I don't think you'll ever see him play on another one of those teams. And I think that he seems to enjoy this role of being around the team, and he's embraced being an assistant captain. And he's been liked by the players, and his captains have said he was a good assistant. So I think you can start inking him in probably as the 2022 Ryder Cup captain. Which will be a foreign Ryder Cup. I think Stricker will be the 2020 captain at Whistling Straits, and then Mickelson's a shoe-in to be the captain at Bethpage. And I'll predict right now, as much as Phil likes doing this, if we win at Bethpage, I wouldn't be surprised to see him be a repeat captain in 2026. But Tigers, that's the next thing that we're going to be talking about him in golf. It isn't going to be as a player.
Well, but still, don't you want to see him at least come back? I mean, for me, it doesn't matter if he wins or not. I mean, that's why we love the Masters and we love the Open Championship. And we love seeing these guys. You know, we loved seeing Arnold Palmer. We didn't care what he shot. We love seeing Jack Nicklaus. And that's why we made such a big deal when guys like Tom Watson said, this is my last Open Championship. Don't you at least want to see him come play, maybe be somewhat competitive, maybe have a round or two, make cuts at majors, and just kind of have that swan song? Don't you almost feel like he deserves that?
No question that he does, and I would love to see that. I just don't know if his makeup is such that he can accept the role of being a ceremonial player. And I think that... you could certainly say that was the case with Palmer at the end of his career. You know, Watson, to me, was a little bit different because he was still able to go out and make cuts and compete at a pretty high level at his age. But, there have been other guys that, made those farewell tours. But, if you look at Tiger at his age, and you look at how some of those other guys were playing at his age, I don't know. I don't see him taking a lot of great pleasure in just showing up at these things and playing that role. I don't think if he can compete, I don't think you'll see him out there doing that.
We're talking to our good friend, author, and 38th president of the PGA of America, Ted Bishop. And it's funny, we love having you on so much, and we talk about anything. And the reason we had you back so soon was to talk a little bit about the schedule. When you had you on last, you mentioned that some of the movement of the PGA Championship and the players, you weren't 100% sure how you felt about it. So take us through your thinking on how the schedule is shaking out.
Well, I just think that when you move the PGA Championship to May, which obviously is going to happen and it's going to continue to be that way, and beginning in 2019, that you're going to eliminate a lot of these traditional northern venues that the PGA has been played at. I know people in your part of the country and other parts would say that's a good thing. That'll open up some new venues, and that, will kind of change the landscape of the PGA Championship. And I think the other thing that's interesting, when you look at the month of May and you look at all the other sporting events that take place in May and what the PGA is now going to be competing with for ratings from a TV standpoint, particularly that weekend, that they're playing, you're going to be going against the Preakness. You're going to be going against NBA finals. You're going to be going against the Stanley Cup playoffs. Those three things right there are competitive entities that, they don't have to deal with right now, when they play at, the first week in August. So, That changes some things, I think, when you get into renegotiating your broadcast rights. And I think the other thing that's a major factor there is when you look at everything that NBC is doing in the month of May, Triple Crown racing and Stanley Cup playoffs, you know, being the two main things. I don't see NBC probably having the interest now towards the PGA Championship, particularly after they picked up the British Open a couple of years ago, that they might have back in say 2013 when the PGA renewed its deal with the NBC for the Ryder Cup through 2030. So, you know, from a business standpoint, it really probably leaves CBS as the only player who may have interest in that PGA Championship. And CBS has been a great partner for the PGA. I don't want anybody to, you know, imply anything other than that with what I'm going to say. But from a negotiation standpoint, if you're trying to get the most out of your TV deal, the more players you've got, the more lucrative deal you're going to get. And right now, I don't see where any of the other major broadcast partners are going to have much, if any, interest for the PGA Championship. And so that's going to limit the PGA, I think, in terms of what that contract, you know, could have been going forward. But it is what it is. And, you know, it's the thing I thought was interesting at the press conferences when they announced this is they talked about now how you had five straight months of continuous championship caliber golf with this new schedule change, with the Players starting in March and, of course, the Masters in April, the PGA in May, the U.S. Open in June, and the Open Championship in July. But, you know, you had the same thing before. It just started with the Masters in April and the Players in May and the U.S. Open in June and the British Open in July and the PGA in August. So, you know, from that standpoint, you know, that didn't change. But, you know, personally, I think – you know, it's probably better for the schedule, no question, at the end of the season to be able to get the FedEx Cup playoffs over with before the start of football, I think is a good thing. It also clears the month of September out now for your international team events like the Ryder Cup and the President's Cup. Gives players some additional time off before the fall series starts. So it's probably without question better for the overall schedule. It's probably better for professional golf, but I don't know that it's better for the PGA of America.
Well, Ted, we always enjoy your opinions and love having you on, and thanks a lot, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Okay, thanks, guys. Have a great weekend.